Dead Tribe Paranormal Halloween Special. This is a collection of stories that we've gathered to help emblazon the spirit of Halloween.
Hi, this is John. I'm with Dead Tribe Paranormal, and we're here today at the Hempstead House, and we're sitting here with Pat, who would like to share a story.
I lived in Ledyard ever since 1963, when my father was stationed in the Navy, and I still live in the same house. Well, off of Colonel Ledyard Highway on Lambtown Road, the one that goes from Colonel Ledyard to Pumpkin Hill, on that road, there's an old house. It's from 1750s.
Okay.
And it was belonged to the original Crouches. Crouches were people that were, they were Quakers. They lived in there, and it was handed down through the Quaker people. They were originally coopers that made barrels, and they came down through the family on the maternal side, and the same family had it into intermarried. They became the Watrouses in the 1970s, was the last Watrous to live there. And so I have a friend who was the third owner after the Watrouses, and she lived there in the 2000s.
Okay.
And she lived there probably at least 5 years, I would say. And I was friends with her, and I went to visit her. And I had introduced her to a lady who was a medium from Michigan that was living here temporarily, that went over there to do a ghost investigation. I don't remember the name of their group, but they did it free for people, homeowners. Because my friend said that there were about 4 or 5 ghosts on the property. She told me about it first, and then I introduced her to this lady who I met through a class I took about ghosts. So the lady came over by herself just to see what she thought of the property, if she picked up anything. Then she said, I'll be back with my crew at midnight on a certain day. This was like probably 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had gone there a couple of days after the first lady came. They hadn't been there with the crew yet. And she said, my friend was telling me about the lady, the psychic lady coming over. And as we were talking, all of a sudden I heard in the basement under the kitchen a great big noise. It sounded like somebody slammed a big door in the basement. And I said to my friend, Janet, is your husband home? Is there somebody here, your brother, maybe somebody's visiting? Who's in the basement? And she's like, nobody. And I said, what's that noise? She said, that's the noise. I said, what noise? And she said, the noise. The ghost noise.
So she knew about it.
She knew. She was already experiencing a lot of things. So then I was talking to her some more about this team of paranormal people that were going to come over. And then right above our heads in the bedroom, above our head, we heard this great big bam. Like, it sounded like a huge family Bible about 4 inches thick fell off of a dresser or something. It was a big bang right above our heads. And I said, oh my God, what was that? And she said, that's the noise again. And then about 5 minutes after that, right about 10 feet from us in the kitchen, we heard what sounded like a car door slamming, but it was in the kitchen and there was nothing. We walked around looking for stuff. What could it be? Nothing. And so it was the ghost's noise. So that she invited me to be there when they had the paranormal people come from midnight till 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
A certain night. And it was in the winter, and it was cold outside. But she had a great big fireplace you could almost walk in. And we were right in front of the fireplace, and she had cheese and crackers and all inside her. So all the ghost people were around doing their thing. And her and I went to the kitchen area to get some snacks to come back to sit before the fire. And we were in the warm part right by the fire walking. And just as we were walking towards the fire, a ghost, well, this is what I think it is, I felt icy cold right through me, from in front of me, through me, and then out my back.
Wow.
And it felt like a bone chilling cold, but it was going through me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked behind, and she said to me, did you feel that? And I said, the cold? And she said, yeah, it went right through me. I said, me too. So we called the paranormal people, and they came with their EVP things.
Yeah, digital recorders.
And they, I could feel the column. I was like looking for it, feeling around, and I could feel the column of cold air, and their EVPs picked up right in that column of cold air.
Wow.
Yeah, and there was nothing that, they said there was nothing that it could have been else. I guess wires or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Electrical.
Yeah, from the power.
Yeah. And she ended up, when the original investigators came, they had said to the owner, don't tell us anything except when the house was built, also when there was additions and when they were built, what year.
Mm-hmm.
So she told them 1750s, and during the Civil War, an addition for the kitchen was made, extending the back of the house. So she didn't tell her about out of any of her haunted experiences there. And when the mediums were there walking around, they picked up on five ghosts. There was one older lady who I think was the grandmother of a man I know who I grew up with, his daughter. So it would be a great-grandmother of the friend I knew in school. And she was a Victorian lady. My girlfriend had seen her, and the medium saw her at different times. And she had a high collar, dark dress, tight bun, Victorian type era, kind of a scowly look on her face because she was stern. That was one ghost. Then there was two girls upstairs who, one was around 12, one was around 9-ish, and they were at the bedroom at the top of the stairs, and my girlfriend had the history given to her by one of the owners, the last owner from the 70s,
okay,
stopped by to give her the written history that, mm-hmm, no, it wasn't in a library or any historical place because it wasn't worthy of the history people because it wasn't like a sea captain, it was just Cooper's. And so she knew the history but didn't tell the mediums. But these two girls up in the top bedroom died of dysentery, I think it was. It was a disease with a D. I think it was dysentery.
Yeah.
And they died of dehydration.
Wow.
And the fever in that bedroom. They were in quarantine. And then there was two men ghosts, one around 40-ish, that would come and go, and he would rattle the door around 9 or 10 o'clock at night. At the same time, he would have been coming in from the barn every night. He would rattle this door that he used to enter through. And then there was an old man bent over that her husband used to see out in the barn area. So those are the five ghosts.
Wow.
And, yeah.
Well, interesting story. So you've been holding on to that for a while.
I tell people who are interested in ghosts about that because I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
But so I was never afraid.
Is that kind of what you got you interested in it?
Oh, no, I've been interested in ghosts since I was little because my father came from Ireland, and there's a lot of superstitious people with Ireland.
Yes.
And my mother's side of the family was the most superstitious. They had my great-grandmother was a Scottish midwife and healer.
So when you heard about this meet and greet tonight, you were excited?
Yes.
Yeah, these are a bunch of good guys.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling your story, Pat.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Have a good night.
My name's Glenn Williams. I'm the half partner in Baltimore Paranormal Research Group, small group here in Baltimore, Maryland. I've had a lot of experiences, but one of my most memorable ones that I had worked welding for a friend of mine, and we put stuff together for waste management. Basically, we all their big construction containers, 30 yards and stuff. They broke them up, we welded them back together. So I worked in their facility. We had our can shop out back of their truck shop. And there was one particular mechanic. It was funny because he started harassing me the first day we started in there. I knew I liked the guy right off the bat because he was coming in there and messing around and cursing at me and Jason. So I like that kind of stuff out of people. But anyways, we kind of hit it off. It irks me that I cannot remember his first name. I could see his face like it was yesterday. He always used to come over to shop in the mornings, and I would either see him, or if I was working, I would see him coming and going. Same path every day, not the same going in the same door. So there's one particular morning, I'm raising my head up from welding, and I see him, red bandana on, jeans, and his yellow vest, walking from about halfway from my building, and he goes up into the bay door, and he turns. And that's when I got up, and it kind of felt weird. I don't know why. I got up and there was no one else around. I was going to go in bullish with him. Go in there. There's no one in there. No one in there. And it wasn't until the next day. I didn't see him the rest of the day. I figured maybe he went home early or something like that. It wasn't until the next day I saw some of the other guys. They started moving his tools out. I asked him what happened. And they said, again, the cops shot him or he shot himself, barricaded in his apartment. And they still had his tools. They were moving his tools out on his truck. But I saw him. I saw him clear as day. He was solid. It was him. It was him walking. And he was already dead. He was dead that day. He'd been killed the night before. I guess, honestly, if, you know, I know I saw what I saw. I know there was no one else there. He was the only one that wore a red bandana. He was the only other guy there that had long hair there besides me. And I knew his walk even from the back. Solid, 100%. It wasn't see-through or anything like that. I saw him walking, and he was already dead. That was very strange when you realize that. You know, when the other mechanic was telling me that he already passed, I'm like, man, I'm telling you, man, I saw him. Yes, no, man, he wasn't here. He was already in the morgue. And I've had other things which have just been glimpses. We catch stuff here in the house all the time and stuff out back. But as far as I could say that's the one time that I actually saw a ghost, that would be the main one. I know what I saw. It's just like anything else, though. Usually when these things happen, there's no one else around. Nobody saw it with you. I wasn't even doing this kind of thing back then, you know. But again, it's one of them instances in my life where it was always there. Even though I didn't pay attention to it, it was always there. It was always showing itself to me. But for the life of me, you know, I have some friends that have passed years ago. And a few recently years, I've been trying to use the Echo Box to try to contact them. Nothing that I can say is validating something that I would get, like a word or a phrase I would know only that person, you know, would know. And that's the kind of stuff I've been looking for.
My name is Bridget, and I'm part of Paranormal Spirit Seeker Society. I have just a couple of quick ghost stories. The first one is, I was about 17 and I was with an ex-boyfriend of mine, and we were at my mom's house, and I remember we were just in bed, just sleeping in there, and then for some reason I woke up at like, I don't know, 1 something in the morning, and the way my bed was, it was pushed up against the wall, and I would sleep on the side against the wall, and he was on the other side. So when I woke up, it just sounded like they were walking back and forth along the edge of the bed trying to get to me. I could hear, it sounded like, you know, when you can hear fabric, like when clothes, like someone's walking very quietly and you can hear the like fabric brushing against like the pants or the dress or anything like that. I was faced against the bed, but I was just like, oh my God, am I hearing what I think I'm hearing? And then I said to my boyfriend, I was like, Eric, do you hear that? And he said, it sounds like someone walking back and forth. And I couldn't believe that he was awake at the same time and he was listening to the same thing. Like, he was laying in bed still listening to that movement, which sounded like a spirit, something walking back and forth. And there was nobody. He turned the light on and, I mean, there was nobody in the room. Never could understand what that was about. I know that my aunt told me once that a neighbor said that there was a fire in that house. I don't know when it happened, but it might have been in the 60s or 70s or something. And I think it was in that room there was a fire. There was always a weird vibe in that room. I mean, I remember once I switched my bed around and I was having these weird nightmares. It's like I felt like something was choking me. And as soon as I moved my bed later on, it stopped. Like, it just didn't like where I had the bed. It was weird. And in the same room, I was dozing off. All of a sudden, as I was falling asleep, I heard the door slam shut. I always would sleep with my door a little bit open because the cat would like to go in and out. As soon as I heard the door slam, I caught what looked like the cat being thrown into the room and the door shutting. And then we had a dog at the time who heard the door slam from upstairs, and he was barking like crazy from the porch downstairs. And the funny thing is, the cat, this was actually my aunt's cat, and he the way he looked, like it, like I swear it looked like something threw him in the room, and he kind of turned around, like he kind of was like, what the fuck? You know, like he turned around like, how dare you? Like he was this very proud little cat. That was really weird because nobody would do that to this cat. And I had this weird feeling between the dog barking like crazy and then seeing the door slam like that. And I knew there was no way the door could slam on its own because you actually had to turn the knob in order to slam that door. You had to kind of lift it a certain way. There was something wrong with this door at the time. So you had to lift up the handle and while the door and kind of jolted up a bit in order for it to slam like that. So I knew that there was some force behind that. So we looked around the house because I think I ended up calling my mom and aunt and I on my cell phone and I was like, oh my God, did you hear that? What was that? And then my aunt was like, I don't know. I heard the door slam too. So we looked around the house. We were afraid, oh my God, was there a burglar or something? I don't know what that was about, but if that was a spirit that picked up the cat and threw it in the room out of like, it was disgusted or pissed at the cat and slammed the door. So that to me was definitely an entity right there. And coincidentally, it was in that same room. I think there was something with that part of the house in that room. I don't know what happened in there, but it's definitely a weird vibe in there. Those were just things that kind of came to my mind that always stuck with me. There was always something with that part of the house. And I remember once I was getting ready to go out and I was the only one in the house. I had the door open. And my dresser was, you know, kind of near the door. The door was to my right. And all of a sudden, I turned because I just felt like someone, and I felt it was a male presence, an angry male presence. I remember I just slowly turned like, oh my God, like I could just feel this tall, angry male presence just looking at me as I was getting ready. And I remember I was just trying to play it cool and I just shut the door and turned on the TV to like forget about what I just felt at that moment. And I stayed in my room until I was ready to rush out of there. You're 8 or 9 years old. I was sleeping in my mom's bed with her because I was always spooked out, seeing different shadows and spirits in my room and all of that, and just I couldn't sleep well, so I would just sleep with her. And I remember I woke up in the middle of the night and I would almost always see something, whether it was a shadow or what would be like a full entity. I could see everything, their features, which is what I saw when I woke up that night. And I saw this elderly woman sitting in, my mom had this chair right near the bed, and the elderly woman was just sitting there looking right at me, and she had this little a soft little smile on her face, and she had her, you know, she kind of was resting her head on her hand, and she just kind of was like, her had her head a little tilted, and she was just looking at me, and she had like curly gray hair, but she didn't look like she was from a certain time period. She had pants, like khaki looking pants and a regular top. She didn't look like Victorian or anything like that, or 1900s or whatever. I couldn't believe it. I put the covers really quickly over my head, and oh, it was just so scary. I remember I was waking up. My mother was like, mommy, mommy. And my mother would get so aggravated, like, because I was always waking her up because I always would end up seeing something at some point. And then she looked up and there was nobody there. But as clear as I can see you, like, that's how clear I saw this woman sitting in the chair, just looking at me. She didn't look pissed, or she looked just very, you know, just very calm, and just looking at me. And I don't know if it was like a relative. From what I'd heard, my mom's house was at one point a rooming house. So who knows what happened there. My mom's house went through a lot. It went through a really dirty period before they bought it, before someone, it was actually going to be a teardown. There was just so much stuff that happened in that. And I was just the only one who saw stuff,
This is Kurt Knapp, the lead investigator of Ghosts of New England Research Society.
In my youth, I spent my summers at my grandmother's cottage on Peaks Island, off the coast of Portland, Maine. The ocean side of the island had many concrete gun emplacements and fortifications that were built to defend Portland from attack during World War II. It was a terrific place for a kid to explore. There are many ghost stories about the area, but the one I liked the best had a family connection. My Uncle George, who was born and raised on Peaks Island, told us the story of his great-great-grandfather, who was captain of a square-rigged sailing ship named the Mary Beth in the early 1800s. The ship had been to many islands in the West Indies, and on the voyage home, bubonic plague broke out on the ship. By the time they reached the harbor of Portland, one-third of the crew had succumbed to the disease and were buried at sea. At first, respectfully and with a service, but as the number of dead grew, the bodies were just summarily tossed overboard. Upon dropping anchor in Portland Harbor, the bosun hoisted a pennant that ships flew when there was illness on board. The harbor pilot rowed out to the anchored Mary Beth, and when he learned it was a plague ship, he made a hasty retreat despite the heartbreaking pleas for help from the captain and crew. Word quickly spread throughout the Portland waterfront of the plague ship, and merchant and seaman alike vowed the ship should never reach the dock, lest the plague spread through the entire city and beyond. A crescent moon hung in a very dark sky when a group of men quietly rowed from the town to the Mary Beth anchorage. The oars were muffled with cloth to avoid making any sound. The men brought bottles of coal oil and smashed them against the sides of the ship, followed by torches. Some of the plague-ridden men had strength enough to pull themselves across the deck and fall into the water in an effort to escape the fire, only to be shot dead by the men in the boats. The Mary Beth burned with flames shooting hundreds of feet into the air, the sounds of screaming men almost as loud as the crackling fire and burning and falling timbers. The ship burned to the waterline and sank out of sight. The only trace left was a cloud of steam and a few floating bodies which were washed out to sea on the next tide. Many times since then, on the anniversary of the sinking of the Mary Beth, people claim to catch a glimpse of her sailing in or near Portland Harbor, her sails in flames, and her skeletal crew and captain leaning over the railing, cursing the city of Portland.
This is Dan, the producer of this show. My father told me about a time when he was working as a heating and air conditioning technician, and he was replacing an electrical component on a furnace. And every time he would replace that part, it would immediately spark and burn out again. He did this 3 times until he had no more parts left to install. While he was working in the basement, he could hear footsteps overhead trampling around to and fro, opening doors and moving things. He walked up the basement stairs to see if the homeowner was there, and upon arrival of the first floor, he quickly found himself alone in an empty house. As he hurriedly gathered up all his tools and ran out the basement on a perfectly calm day, the door firmly hit him in the backside, as if to say, "Get lost." Other stories of this house tell of the original owner, how he used to raise the thatch roof to shoot at Native Americans as they passed by. That roof has long since been replaced with the modern one, but in that spot where the man would take aim on his fearful enemies, this new roof would still leak. A dormer has been recently installed in that section, and the leak has since ceased. Upon digging a foundation to build a new addition to the house, the digger was kicked by an unknown foot, and the victim fell into the hole and broke his leg. When he turned to look at his assailant, not a single person could be found. To this day, no one enters the old part of the house at night. They're all quite content staying in the section built by the injured man.
Old man can't stand locked in the pit. Oh my god. I'm getting out of here.
Hi, Dan. I'm doing this for Dan Gilman, his ghost stories. And I'm going to touch on a few different things tonight. I'm going to mention a history that we've had. This isn't necessarily spiritual, except for the fact that it's a Ouija board experience. It started back in 1989. My father was dying, and my brother Vinny and I were getting into the Ouija. And we began using it. And this was not your Ouija board, per se, that you would buy. What we did, it was the old Italian way, which we cut out each letter, A through Z, yes and no, and, of course, all the numbers. We would spread it out, and we used a shot glass that was my grandmother's and her mother's, they say, before that. So it was very, very old. It was well over 100-year-old shot glass. We began using it, and we were at the store. I had a tile store up on Route 1 in Linfield, Mass. And then I had sold the store to my brother. And on the property, you know, of course, it was a recession going on. Things were a little quiet. So we said, geez, you know, we started fooling around one day. We said, oh, let's do the Ouija board. My cousin Glenn was there, myself, my brother Vinny, my brother Jerry, and my ex-wife. We were in there, and we began doing the Ouija. And we were getting quite a bit of information, but at this time, my father was dying of a brain tumor, and he had just been operated on. And one of the questions that we asked the Ouija was my father going to die, and when? I know that's a question you really shouldn't get into, but you know what, at that point in time, it was just something that was on our minds. Well, the Ouija board said, no, Mike will die first.
Mike's first.
Mike was my Uncle Mike. My Uncle Mike was Glenn's father, who was also sitting at the table. We didn't think anything of it. We didn't realize my Uncle Mike was that sick. 3 days later, my Uncle Mike died. My father didn't die for another 6 months. But during this time period, we began using the Ouija board more and more and more. It's almost becoming an obsession. That same day, after that experience, my brother and I were using it, and we were barely touching the glass. I mean, both of our hands would fall off the glass occasionally. And at one point, my brother went into like a trance, and his arm froze, and it was ice cold. And he had full control of the cup at that point. My hand couldn't keep on it, and he was like out of it. He was just staring off into space, and it began making a cross and a pentagon. And he kept doing it faster and faster and faster. It was like he had no control of this. And if you try telling him, Vinny, take your hand off. And he had no control. He didn't. He was in a trance. All of a sudden, the glass just flew off the table, smashed up against the wall, and broke into pieces. My ex-wife was there. My brothers, both of my brothers, of course, and my cousin were there to see this. And they were, like, completely in shock. But this the thing with the Ouija board, you have to be very, very careful of, is it will continue to draw you in. It will continue to make you want to be on this. You'll keep searching for answers. It was telling about past lives. At one point, it told me that I was a soldier in the British army in the 1600s. It just, you know, it was giving information, but it was luring you in more and more. So as things went on, we began doing it not just at the store, but also at our homes. And one night I was at home in my own house, and I went into a trance doing this. I began using the Ouija board. I actually went into a trance, but shortly after that, my marriage started being on the rocks. It was like something was possessing me. Something was taking over in me. Something was unleashed in the house. We were in this old Victorian. It was a very old, over 100-year-old Victorian in Melrose, Mass. And my sister-in-law came over to stay. She was a teenager at the time, and she was going to sleep on the first floor. Of course, my wife and I are upstairs. At one point during the night, she comes running up and saying, "I'm staying with you guys. I'm not staying down there alone anymore." And apparently, she saw an apparition. It was a Victorian woman. She thought, actually, that it was my wife, because it was built similar, but her head was down, and she was wearing, like, a bonnet. And then she lifted up her head, she was holding a candle, and then just disappeared. That's when my sister-in-law, of course, freaked out and ran upstairs. Later, another few weeks later, her boyfriend flew in from Arizona, and he was staying downstairs. Of course, my sister-in-law and my wife stayed upstairs, and I slept downstairs on the couch in the other room. And Tommy was sleeping, and he come running in. Ronnie, wake up. He says, "I just saw what seemed to be a beast in the room," and he was totally scared and shaking. And I said, "Relax, don't worry." And what I believe the Ouija board did was pull out some type of a demon. And my brother and I continued doing the Ouija board for years to come. Later on, my brother would get sick and die of cancer. What happened was, I began doing the Ouija board again later. And that's just my dog over here making noise. I began doing the Ouija board again a few times. I was trying to get information as to what's going on. And of course, I became much more spiritual again after Vinny passed. And one of the things that I found that in the house I was living in, and later I was living up in New Hampshire, and of course, again, my marriage began going on the rocks after I started using the Ouija board again. That's why the Ouija board is an extremely dangerous piece of equipment. I don't recommend it to people. I recommend people stay away from it. It's a porthole into something. But apparently, I believe I pulled a demon out, because one night I woke up, we're still in the same, you know, room, my wife and I, and it was a summer night, so the moon was bright, and I woke up, and what I saw in front of me was this demon with red eyes just staring at me. It was like almost like a half wolf type of thing, very big, very large, and it was growling. It scared me, but my first reaction, and I was wide awake, my first reaction, of course, was to protect my family. So I leaped at this thing. As I lunged to it, it just disappeared. But I remember it growling. I remember that noise. And, I, you know, that's one of the reasons why I recommend that people stay away from the Ouija board. It's a very dangerous, dangerous piece of equipment, and you don't know what you're unleashing. And I've seen this firsthand. A few years prior to that, before I had gone into the Ouija board again, of course, right after my brother and my mother had passed away, I was at my house in Hampton. I was talking to my cousin, who also does paranormal investigations. And Glenn and I were talking on the telephone. And as we're talking on the telephone, I felt a burning sensation in my arm. Now, there's nothing sharp near me. Okay, I'm just at the table. We're on the phone about an hour, and he was up in California at the time. And I look down, and my arm is bleeding. There's a cut on my arm, and I'm bleeding. I'm thinking, how did this happen? You know, how did I get this? But then I just figured, well, maybe I just got a cut. But I went into the bathroom. I called my daughter, and I said, "Jeez, look at this." I says, "My arm is bleeding. I don't even know why." And as she looked at it, I held my arm up, and the mirror was in front of me. And all of a sudden, another slice appeared out of nowhere, and my arm was cut. And then a third slice, and my daughter witnessed it and just began screaming. And the significance of this is, this was the 16th of September. And the reason I mention that is, when you looked at the cut in the mirror, it was a 17. The next day, of course, being the 17th, was the 20th anniversary of my father's death. I told my daughter, run in the kitchen and get a Scott towel so I could, you know, clean the cut without getting blood everywhere. As she ran in the kitchen, she screamed again. I went running in. There was blood on the wall with a 17 in the center. I swear upon God with this. This is the most spookiest story that you could even imagine. Later on, of course, I'm talking to my ex-wife at the time. She comes home, and I told her what was going on. And she was kind of skeptical. She really doesn't believe in it a lot. I mean, I think she believes in it, but she doesn't want to. And then I said, yeah, even today, I says, I was at the store, and I felt the back of my leg bleeding. But, of course, there was nothing there. She says, yeah. She goes, you know, you probably did it yourself by accident. You don't realize it. And my daughter, of course, said, no, I watched the cut. So I said, well, I'm going in the shower. I says, you know, take a shower. And all of a sudden, I let out a scream in the shower because I looked down and there was all blood in the water. The back of my calf was all scratched, 3 scratches numerous times in the back of my calf. As I says, very, very freaky. I attribute a lot of this to the Ouija board. I believe you have to be careful with this. I believe it's if you really have the gift to contact the other world, you have to be careful with who you're actually contacting. You know, what are you contacting? Remember, there are 3 types of spirits. There are just spirits that are there lingering. There are mischievous spirits that like to do things and you know, have some fun and kind of let you know they're there, and they hide things. And if you've ever noticed, the keys are missing, things like those type of spirits. But then there's the 3rd type of spirit, and that's a demon. And a demon's very, very dangerous. I was told this because this is exactly how it was told to me by a psychic at a Halloween party 2 years ago. She sat there and she said to me, I want to do your, a friend of mine had run this party and he had paid for all of the, people to get a psychic reading. I didn't want it. After all my experiences, I wanted to keep things the way they were. So, that's just my dog again, I'm sorry. Louie. In fact, the funny thing is he usually doesn't act up like this. I'm very surprised at him. As I was saying, I didn't want my fortune read. I didn't want my reading done. And she was a very, very beautiful Jamaican girl. And she kept walking by and looking at me. And I kept looking at her. And finally she came up to me. She goes, I have to do your reading. And I was kind of in a joker mood. I said, yeah, sure. Let's sit down. We'll have a drink and we'll you know, you can do my reading. Well, we started talking. And she said, what do you do? I said, well, I'm a Mason. She goes, what else do you do? And I says, nothing. I'm a Mason. Why? And she says, you dabble in the spirit world, don't you? And I says, yes, I do. I says, but how did you know that? She says, I'm a psychic. She goes, I could tell. She goes, you're treading in very dangerous areas, she says. You have a demon out to get you. She goes, and she explained to me about the 3 types of spirits. And she says, the demon can kill you. She goes, everybody thinks that spirits cannot hurt you. She goes, they're wrong. There are demons that can kill you. They can cause accidents. They can cause sickness. They can cause illness. And she says, I advise you to get out of this, burn sage, or become very good at it and learn more. She goes, if you're going to do this, you can't do it halfway. You have to go into this very, very deeply. You have to investigate. She says, you know, by doing it the way you're doing it, you know a little bit about it, but you know just enough to get hurt. And she says, you should really take courses in it. You should learn from others, seminars. She goes, if you're going to stay in it. Otherwise, I advise you to get out of this or they're going to kill you. And I took this half-heartedly. I really didn't think about it. But then recently, of course, I do paranormal investigations. As I said, my name is Ron Giannusa. Myself and Bridget and Anya, we have a team, Paranormal Spirit Seekers Society.
Jonathan. She comes to me in the night, dainty as a sprite, tiptoed little cricket, looming with her flight. She lures me to arise, and much to my surprise, through the door she takes flight. She beckons me to follow to the maleficent hollow where the demons wait to seal my fate and another soul they'll swallow.
Hello, my name is Jamie, and I've been captivated by all things Halloween for as long as I can remember. Over the decades, there's been many changes to the holiday and the way we recognize it and celebrate it. But there has been a few consistencies which have remained a prominent part of the tried and true traditions of Halloween, one which is our fascination for ghost stories. I should mention that I'm more of a believer than not. I couldn't say with total certainty that ghosts do indeed exist, but I can say that I'm not a closed-minded person. Rather, I'm an open-minded person, open-minded enough to say that their existence is more than a possibility, or at least it is to me. Because I'm not a disbeliever, has that heightened my chances for a ghostly encounter? Well, I'm sure skeptics would say probably, and they may be right. But what would those same skeptics say when a number of people, believers and disbelievers alike, had experienced the very same ghostly encounters that I had? So with further ado, here is the story of one of my very own personal experiences. It was late in summer of 1995 when I was hired by a family who owned a few various businesses. They hired me to build them a seasonal man-made haunted house in a building that was rented, which was located in Hammond, Indiana. The building that the family chose to run their haunted house in was ideal, a three-floor Tudor-style building that was set back from the Foreman Expressway, which was also known as I-94. The place had an ominous look to it, and being nestled between clumps of old trees only added to its creepiness. Countless Gothic windows and a large size made the place the perfect location for a haunted attraction. I was eager to start and was soon introduced to a few local men who were hired to turn my designs into reality by building walls, seams, and props that were sure to take the old building and turn it into a really fun, scary haunted house. We quickly got underway since the time was ticking towards the kickoff of the Halloween season. None of the guys on the crew stood out. They were all very normal, family-type men who worked various jobs doing construction and carpentry. So to them, this was nothing more than another job in which that would earn them a paycheck each week. A few days in, one of the carpenters, whose name was Bill Reed, was building a large grandfather clock prop. And he came over and asked me, "What's okay?" Having no clue what he said or what he meant, I said, "What?" He said, "Was it you who was behind me and saying it's okay, Bill?" I said, "No, it wasn't me." Both of us kind of shrugged it off. A few hours later, Mickey Reback said, "Does anyone else feel you're being watched here?" A few said yes, a few said no. But little eerie, unexplainable things like this continued to occur. Lights would go on, then they'd turn off. Radios would blast away full volume, then turn way down low. Doors would open and shut. All these things would happen absolutely on their own with no one around them, or at least no one who was mortal. One night, I was working alone on the upstairs floor. This is the floor that seemed to have the majority of the strange occurrences. It was late, I put in a long day, and I kept encountering the same problem over and over. Every time I'd set a tool down, whether it be a hammer, a screwdriver, a paintbrush, or a pair of pliers, when I'd reach back to pick that tool up, it was gone. I chalked it up to my being overtired, and after having this happen more than once, even finding one of my tools that was just been used all the way across the floor on the other side of the room, I said, okay, it's time to call it a night. But I still didn't think much of it. I certainly didn't think anything paranormal. If anything, I thought it was just someone playing a joke on me, even though I was the only one on that floor. As the work went on, more and more folks were claiming similar incidents. Nothing that scared the bejesus out of anyone, but surely incidents that would give you the willies. With Halloween now in full swing, the haunted house was getting great reviews. People were coming from all around to buy their tickets and walk through with the hopes of getting a good fright. Though I think that the best fright of all was about to happen to me. A few nights before Halloween of 1995, I was walking, shutting down the scary music after the night's end, along with the blood red lights, the animated monsters that would pop up and startle the guests. Again, I made my way to the top floor. There was no one on that floor of the house but me, when I saw a smallish-sized black shadow dart directly in front of me. I knew I'd seen something, but I wasn't exactly sure what it was. So I didn't think much of it. I continued on my rounds. A few hundred feet down the hall, I saw it again. Just a lightning fast black shadow darting right across my path, a few mere feet in front of me. Now this time, I couldn't shrug it off. I couldn't make an excuse. I knew I'd seen something, though I wasn't quite sure what it was. I just knew it wasn't of this world. I admit it was something that scared me. It did shock me and startle me. Though I never told anyone because I feared that if I did, no one, or none of our real spooks, that is, would work that part of the floor or even that part of the haunted house. From that night on, I always had someone walk with me as I shut down the house, though I made it seem as though I just wanted someone to talk to about that night's event. A few years later, I was walking through a discount store and saw a wall of books. They were very nice books that were being sold for a fraction of their initial price. A single book stood out to me, and I treated myself and bought it. The book was called Haunted Indiana. Later, when I got home, I skimmed through the book, and I noticed a very small blurb, 6 lines total, about the very same building that I built the man-made haunted house in Hammond, Indiana. The short story simply said the building was indeed haunted. It was once known as the headquarters for a nationally well-known herbal supply company from the 1920s. The building was said to be haunted by the presence of a small-sized ghost thought to be the female and, of course, the company's former owner, though no one knew for sure who it was or what it wanted. That is a true experience that I had. This will be my second story that I'd like to tell you folks about. Every state has its take on ghost stories. These are based on the same principles, while varying to some degree. We've all heard about the Lady in White, the Shadow Man, the Phantom Train, or the Vanishing Car. To me, these were little more than campfire folklores, told mostly to frighten kids or young couples in love. I myself put little stock into these tall tales. That is, until I witnessed one myself. I can only tell you what I saw. The believing part will be up to you. Though I will tell you that not a single word will be embellished or fabricated. With that said, here is my story. It was late one night. I was driving from Rockford, Illinois, to my home in Chicago. The highway was not busy. Not much traffic on the roads in these parts, these wee hours of the night. I wasn't overly tired. I certainly wasn't impaired in any way by any substance. Just heading home on a beautiful evening, late in the night. There wasn't any bad weather. It was the perfect night for a drive, actually. The highway was the typical 2-lane in one direction, separated by a wide center grassy medium, which acted as a divider for the other 2 lanes going in the opposite direction. I'd see the occasional big rig approaching in the opposite lane and even had a few cars pass me by in the left lane since I was traveling in the right lane. After those cars passed, there wasn't another car, or any vehicle for that matter, in sight for as far as I could see, be it in front of me or from behind. Suddenly, and of course out of nowhere, I see the headlights in my driver's side mirror. They're approaching fast, but since the roadway was flat, these headlights seem to appear from out of the blue. I continue to watch the headlights get closer and closer to my driver's side mirror. And within an instant, the headlights went from being behind me to being almost directly alongside of me. I look over to my left to see a long black hood come into my vision. The black paint job was pristine, but what stood out to me more was the chrome skull hood ornament, whose eyes illuminated in a blood red color. The car continues to come up on my left side. It's then that I notice that the car with the long black front hood and chrome skull hood ornament was an old hearse. Now, I'm not a car expert, but my guess is that this old hearse was from the 1930s time period. It pulled directly even with me. I strained to look over while still trying to focus on the road. I looked to the inside of the car of the old hearse, and as I did, it was then that I saw that the hearse was indeed driverless. Now, I know how this sounds. I wouldn't believe it myself if someone told me. But I know what I saw, and I'll believe my eyes from the day I die. The hearse kept pace with me for less than a mile when it kicked itself into some kind of took off like a bat out of hell. Rocketed down the highway as if it was powered by, indeed, a rocket. Within seconds, its taillights were gone. Now, ironically, there were no exit ramps in sight. It simply vanished.
Hi, this is John Trainor, the host of Dead Tribe Paranormal Podcast, and this is my ghost story. It was the fall of my 8th grade year in middle school. We had just moved into a house in Vernon, Connecticut. Little did we know that it would be as haunted as it turned out to be. That fall, my first memory of my first experience that involved the paranormal started when I came home from school one day. My dad and my brothers were not in the house at the time. It was the first couple weeks of our new house, and I had anxiety from coming to a new town, meeting new people, and going to a new school, so I wasn't sleeping very well. So that fall afternoon, I came home from school, grabbed something to eat, and went to lay down. I had left the TV on. Quickly after finishing what I was eating, I fell asleep. I heard a noise that had woke me. It sounded like a door slamming. I was in that state where we are half asleep and half awake. And I remember the position I was lying in. I was facing the front of the house, and my back was to the door to the bedroom. I soon began to feel like somebody was kneeling behind me, and as they kneeled on the bed, my body started to tilt back, and I got chills. It felt like they were creeping over me and staring at me. I froze. It maybe only happened for about 10 seconds, but it felt like it was so much longer. After it went away, I didn't feel it anymore. I jumped up, ran downstairs, and ran out of the house. I waited on the front porch until my brother came home. This was my first of many experiences in this house. I was always terrified to stay there alone.
Best avoid holy ground.
Why are you singing?
It's being said, strange things happen there. So listen up and be aware. No, this ain't no nursery rhyme. It is known for some heinous crime.
Did you say anus?
Stop and think before you dig in. Cause that house, it lives to scare. And if you find your way inside, you better find a place to hide.
Thanks for listening to Dead Tribe Paranormal. After you're done, please listen to our other podcast, Rock Stories. In this series, we meet with music artists and bands that are out there keeping the scene alive. We capture and share their stories with you, the fans, and use their music as a soundtrack. Also look forward to new shows like Audibly Anonymous, the show where you, the listener, can anonymously share your deepest secrets. Please visit our website at echopodmedia.com and sign up for our email list on the homepage.
Hello, world. You're listening to Echo Pod.